That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Lafondra looking to get close side of Font. Lafondra away from Davis. 3-1 Reading. 3 points Reading.
Hello and welcome to the Elm Park Rolls podcast, supported by Blue Collar Street Food. Well, it's a bit of a downbeat one again. In the podcast house here, I've been joined by Jacob Self-Klein. How are you doing, Jacob?
Hello. Good morning. No, it's the afternoon now. I'm all right. Time just becomes this like liminal cloud thing after a Reading loss. You don't really know what day of the week it is or time of day it is, but it's yeah, it's business as usual, isn't it? It's rubbish, lads.
It's absolutely rubbish. And I've also been joined by Matt Lansley. Hi, Matt.
Good morning and afternoon. No, I'd got it wrong as well. we're all getting it wrong. And like last week, I called Alex Paul. At least I get to call you Paul today. So here we go.
Yeah, thanks. I'm amazed you didn't call me Alex. And I'm going to just say good evening, because just like do the whole spectrum of time possible. So, yeah, we're going to talk about now about a 1-0 defeat against Mill yesterday at the Select Car Leasing Stadium. I still don't like that at all. But Jake Cooper obviously coming back and scoring the only goal. The man is an absolute mountain at corners. Didn't really have a shot. Wasn't a hell of a lot to talk about, but we're going to try that, Jacob. What was your mood going into the match? Because we had one change with Tom Holmes coming into the team and TDB going out.
I think in the blissful week build-up leading up to it, where we'd sort of had a chance to half forget about that awful loss to Blackpool, the noises coming out of the club were that, right, well, this is going to be the first game where Ince has managed to have him on the training ground and, you know, it magically improve them and turn us into promotion favourites. But that didn't happen. But I was still thinking, well, it'd be interesting to see if anything's changed, you know, since... Because obviously we had a little bit of an uptick in form, which might not have been down to Ince, given that he didn't have a chance to work on them. And then we got a pace thing. So we thought, right, okay, what's this going to be? Is it going to be another pace thing? Are there going to be signs of improvement? And we didn't get pasted, but we didn't seem to be very improved. Team-wise, I was pleased to see Rinham Hotter back in midfield. And the team sheet, at least, looked a little bit more promising going into the game. A bit more of a balance, bit more of a straightforward 4-2-3-1 with players in their actual positions. Even though I still don't think Tom McIntyre is necessarily a left-back, but that's another story. So, yeah, coming into the match, I thought, come on, lads, impress me. I don't just mean the players, I mean Paul Ince too. Like, try and justify why you've been brought in. Let's see, you know, what you've got to add. And I just came away feeling, you know, more of the same, really, just thoroughly dejected, thinking if we're not going to win these games, or at least really show up in these games, when are we going to do it? Because, you know, the games are running out and we're still slipping towards the trapdoor. So,
yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, now we're only 5 points away from the relegation zone after yesterday's results, with Derby beating Barnsley, by the sounds of it, quite comfortably. But talking about his point there that he made there, Jacob, about kind of like us looking okay and maybe kind of a little bit more organised, hopefully at some point. Do you think that was the case, Matt, or do you think Millwall just completely stepped off the gas in the second half? Not that they were ever really on the gas fully, but it kind of didn't really need to do much, did they?
No, and we've said this so many times this season as part of the frustrations that we've got at the moment. You know, teams are not even having to play well. You know, teams are actually looking pretty poor when they're playing us, and yet they're still comfortably beating us. And that's one of the things about yesterday. You know, we've had a whole week on the training pitch, and quite frankly, we were looking almost worse than ever yesterday, which does start to ring alarm bells. You know, when you know, this should be the time, like Jacob said, that, you know, we should be coming into these games with a bit of impetus, bit of a change, bit of momentum. Obviously, Paul's finally got time to get his ideas across, and yet, like I say, they just seem completely devoid of any ideas, and worse than ever at set plays, as we'll come on to.
Yeah.
Oh God, yeah. Now that's the 20th goal we've conceded from a set piece. I gotta say, if we're gonna be good at something, you might as well do it properly. You know, let's just completely shithouse ourselves and could be miles and miles of worse defensively at set pieces. I mean, 20, Jacob, that is insane, isn't it, to concede?
It's shocking, but I think the most shocking thing about it is that we identified it as a problem really early doors in the season. Really, really, like, soon after the season started, we could tell, hang on a minute, we're not looking the same defensively. We're being beaten a little easily from corners. I mean, I know people were harping on about zonal marking under the previous management, under Paunovic. It doesn't, for me, it's not necessarily a systemic thing. It's just I don't know whether it's like players not switching on, which in itself would be a bit inexcusable. But, I mean, say what you like about Jake Cooper being, you know, 6'9", 7'11". There was a picture that I think Jonathan Lowe from the Reading Post, Get Reading, Birch Alive, whatever it's called nowadays, so Cooper had three men on him for his goal. It was Yeardham that went up with him. I think it might have been Holmes, someone else. And, you know, I know he's big, but if you got three men on him and Cooper still manages to get the best contact and you know, puts it away, there is a real inevitability about corners at the moment. They're almost like penalties for the opposition. And we say it every week, and nothing seems to change. And I think that's the most infuriating thing, is that, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to identify that as a problem. And it'd be such a useful fix if we were just a little better from set pieces. But, you know, multiple managers now and multiple backlines, injuries aside, have just not been able to get it. And we're suffering for it.
Yeah, horrendously. And I think Millwall only had three corners yesterday. So he really didn't take that many opportunities to get the odd chance. And just looking at that photo that I think Jonathan Lowe put up, it did remind me in a horrible way of the Sonko one.
Yeah, right. It's funny you should say that. Right, because I've got, hang on, courtesy of, this is a bit of visual media, courtesy of Jack Winstanley, former Radio Barks, here is Ibrahima Sonko rising like a salmon against Manchester United. You know,
nice. That's working so well for the audio listeners.
Oh, completely. Yeah.
Definitely click on Twitter.
But, I mean, I think Jake Cooper had shades of Superman Sonko about him yesterday. Yeah, totally.
Oh, yeah, no, he's a very good defender. I mean, brilliant at those set pieces. We know that. We saw that when he was at Reading, so it wasn't a total surprise. And will he continue to score again against other teams? Yeah, he will. It's not just going to be us. But if we go back right to the beginning of the match, it was a sloppy start straight away between Morrison and Yadam, giving Millwall an opportunity for a couple of free kicks right on the edge of your box, which you don't want to do with Jed Wallace, Matt, because that is not the ideal scenario.
Yeah, and I said it to the guys that I was with in Club 1871 just right at the start, because it's just like you're playing against someone with Jed Wallace, who's their set piece taker, and you've given them two free kicks within 3 minutes, you know, right on the edge of your box. It's just the ineptitude of like doing that's got to have been like just rule one from like the start of the game with Millwall, with the aerial threats they've got. Don't give any sloppy early corners away, and don't give away any stupid free kicks on the edge of your box, because you're just then inviting something to happen. And like, in fairness, both free kicks were pretty poor in the end, so we were lucky in that sense. But you know, it's just the footballing intelligence seemingly of this team. And like Jacob said, we've seen it time and time again, and it's like it with corners, with the marking, and you know, the ineptitude that our players seem to show, that like the game knowledge, you can almost put it into any scenario that Reading have played this year, you know, whether it's seeing out games, time management at the end of the game, you know, there's just nothing within the team that seems to be clever. You know, there's no brain in this team seemingly. And it, like you say, it's just shown again in another sense right at the start of the game.
What's worrying is that's two of the most experienced players on the pitch, if not the two most experienced. And you kind of might get that from Tom McIntyre, because obviously he's playing out position, I would say, Jacob, at the moment. He wouldn't naturally be a left-back, would he?
No. He's it's funny. I mean, I know he's been deployed at left-back several times. And as you know, time and again, done an all right job. He's not a left-back. He's not. And I think having a lot of people having not really made their mind up on Babarahman throughout the season, like it's really clear to me now that we really are missing him. Because, you know, I know he's a natural left back, and I know as well, it's not the first time he's been out of the team with him and Yeardham going to the African Cup of Nations in January. But now more than ever, we really do kind of need a natural left back there. And I know we've been scuppered by injury, by our financial situation, and not really having a decent academy left back. I know Bristow's, you know, in and out of the squad, but he's kind of the best we can do at the moment. It's not ideal. He would probably be my starting centre back over Holmes, but we can't afford, you know, to play him at centre back at the moment. So it's a really tough one. I mean, I think my takeaway, it's going back to what you two were saying about, you know, decision making and experience and whatever, and not having any footballing brains. That extends to off the pitch too. You know, there doesn't seem to be any brilliant decision making from the management team, and also from the owners and you know who are advising them. There just doesn't seem to be any joined up thinking, which extends right from the top to the bottom of the food chain, and it's just baffling how. We'll come on to talk about the substitutions, I'm sure, but you know, when we have the ability to make a change, either in terms of substitutions or management or anything, there just seems to be this real like reticence and reluctance to do it. And when we do, it's way too late. So that's my main takeaway. It's just how disjointed it all is, how disjointed it all feels, and no real urgency. You know, we can say, oh well, X player isn't trying. Y player isn't trying, you know, Z player isn't good enough, but it's the lack of, you know, they just haven't gelled and haven't done it for anyone. So, yeah.
No, we're just consistently, I can say it, I can get it out, is just individual brilliance, aren't we? That's what we're waiting for, is for Lucas Jow, John Swift. Sometimes it would be Ajaria, just sometimes, you know, there's a multitude of players in that midfield who can sometimes do something. But if you're relying on that, you're not going to do very well. You need to have a whole team set up. And I'm talking about Babarahman there. It's kind of defensively, he hasn't always been the best, but we really suffer with him attacking wise not being in the team, because Tom McIntyre's giving everything there. I don't think he did anything particularly wrong yesterday. I thought he was fine. But it really unbalances the team, because everything has to go down our right-hand side, Matt, doesn't it? And teams will know that. They're not stupid. They work out very quickly. They see thousands of videos of us.
Of course. And you know, they're going to exploit, you know, McIntyre at left-back, which they did it quite a bit yesterday. You know, a lot went down their right-hand side at our left, you know, and it was like that when they eventually got the shot away, I think, from McNamara, their wing back, to win the corner. Yes, it was a stray pass from Drinkwater out to the side of the pitch, but you know, everything they were, or most of the stuff they were exploiting was down their right hand side. And when you've got weaknesses, or almost seemingly constant weaknesses in your team like that, like say, teams will know, teams will exploit it. You know, they'll have the tape. Other teams seemingly have brains in their team that can do that, you know, that we seem so devoid of. But yeah, you know, like say, I'm not coming in for McIntyre, because I don't think he had an overly poor game yesterday. I thought he was relatively good, and the difference on the whole looked relatively okay for the most part of the game yesterday as well, I think. But I think a lot of that was down to Millwall just not needing to do anything because we weren't doing anything. You know, it was very much like trading blow for blow after they went 1-0 up, and you know that there was no real blows being given. So it was yeah, it just petered out. And but yeah.
Yeah, it's like kind of Tyson Fury beating someone with one arm behind his back, isn't it? It's kind of like, oh, there we go. I'll do it. If I need to, I continue to punch you, but I don't really need to.
And it's funny, sorry to jump in, because, again, Paul Ince, when he came in, one of the things he was really trying to emphasise was, well, we've got the attacking talent up front, and we, you know, the attack's not a problem. But I would say that yesterday it probably was a problem. Do you know what I mean? It's goes back to what you were saying, Paul, about, you know, yes, we are a team of individually so-called brilliant players who can change a game in a moment. But when they don't do it, and because they are inconsistent enough not to do it every week, we really struggle. And that's why, again, the later and later it got in the game, you were just crying out for something up top to change. And, you know, it doesn't matter how tidy you are at the back, and often we're not. You know, you need a cutting edge, and we didn't have one. It was like a blunt force object. So,
well, it was almost like yesterday. It was almost like, because Millwall, I don't really know how they've done it this year, but Matt Williamson touched on it in the preview podcast with the Millwall pod that he spoke with. Millwall have almost turned into a possession football team, and like in a like a good football team, you know, to somehow over the last year. And we seem to set up on the counter attack against them, but there was no pace in that counter attack, you know. Yeah. And it's the thing with a Reading team over the last year, you've not really even been able to identify what kind of football we're trying to play. And even though you kind of tried to identify it yesterday, because like I said, it kind of seemed like we were playing or trying to play counter attacking football. And yet there was just no counter-attacking. There was no pace. There was no nothing really to even show that, yeah, that was what we were trying to play, you know. And it's like I said, it's been a systemic almost problem within the team for quite some time. Just no identity, no real plan. Yeah. And like we've said, it's whether that stems right from the top, you know, it's something needs to happen within this team, because there's just nothing, no planning, no style, no nothing.
Oh, I think you're on mute, Paul.
You've muted yourself, Paul.
Yeah, that's my unless we've like gone through some time warp. You're on mute, Paul.
If only. Oh dear, that actually fell by me. I said some massive stuff there. You would not believe it.
change the punditry game in those 10 seconds.
No, what I was going to say was that if you just look at the goal that we conceded, that was classic Reading, wasn't it? We have a corner. It's a poor corner. This happens. We get counter-attacked. Overloaded. Rinomoto puts in a brilliant tackle. Then Drinkwater gives the ball away. Southwood, pretty good save, I've got to say, to keep that one out. Then we concede. We've basically gone from one end of the pitch to the other in probably less than a minute, from a good attacking position to an absolutely dire position by conceding the first goal. None of us thought that we were really going to come back from that, Jacob, did we? We all hoped, but we never had any confidence.
No, whenever we concede the first goal, there's always... I mean, our track record speaks for itself whenever we concede first, really. You know, just same old stories. An ex-Reading player, ex-Academy product, you know, who I think was a bit unfairly discarded under Jaap Stam, but I think... Back then, it was more a case of Cooper not necessarily fitting the mould of like a ball-playing centre-back that Stam clearly wanted. But God, what we could do for a Jake Cooper now in this defence. You know, I think he's Millwall captain, isn't he, as well? So, I mean, yeah. Clearly, you know, a bit of a leader as well. Something which we don't have many of. And yeah, but just the minute I saw him wheeling away in celebration, I thought, yeah, okay, brilliant. Ex-Royal, promo corner, 1-0 down. We know how this is going to end. And, you know, this sort of sad inevitability about it. I think as well, there was this weird controversy over how he celebrated, which was a bit of a nothing story. Apparently, everyone thought he was giving it the big one to the family stand in the Eamon Dolan. But apparently he was just like pointing up at the, you know, pictures of the man who you know, brought him and so many others through and kind of made him the player he is. So, you know, I don't think there was necessarily anything in that. But yeah, I don't know. It's the same old, as far as us going behind is concerned.
Yeah, we did have an opportunity pretty soon after us, though, Matt, didn't we? With Ovi Jarrett, Lucas Jarrett coming in, making a movement and linking up with John Swift on the edge of the Millwall box. And John Swift, it is an opportunity. It's one you'd expect him to get a better shot away, really.
I've just remembered the chance. I was trying to really remember the chance there. I was thinking, when was this? Did I miss it? No, it was the one where he absolutely skied it over, wasn't it? You know, when John Swift's in that position, he's able to angle it onto his right foot as well. You can almost see it nestling in the far corner, not the far corner of the Millwall stand, which it ended up doing. It's a thing as well, like we said about Reading going behind. I think we've only gained, I think it's like 7 points from losing positions this year in 3 games. You know, when we go behind in games, there's just nothing that brings us back into games. But I mean, that chance from Swift, like you say, it was, you just expect him to do better with that, at least challenge the keeper, you know. But I don't know whether or not it bobbled or what, but I know I'm trying to make excuses from here at this point, but
a bad shot. These things
it's
happen.
Just dreadful. Yeah.
I'm definitely not going to call out John Swift. If it wasn't for John Swift, this season would be absolutely screwed, Jacob. We'd be down.
It was even in like happier moments when we were 3 up against Preston. I thought to myself, my God, we're going to miss him next season, whatever division we're in. Because
at least that thought would have been very short, because it was only about 15 seconds we were 3-0 up against
Preston. Yeah, you know what? You're spot on. But it's the same old thing. Even in previous seasons, when Swift hasn't really come into his own as he has this season, with just the sheer number of goals and assists. I mean, no other player in England certainly English player has contributed as much as he has this season. Even in previous seasons, when Swift didn't turn up for us, the whole team didn't really turn up. And again, it's, you know, we have been really reliant on him this year just for goal contributions alone. But performance-wise as well, when Swift has a slight off game, the whole performance level of the 11 just drops. So I don't know. I mean, it's that revolving doors moment, because even if I think if Swift had put away that chance, I still don't necessarily think we would have come away with anything. But you never know.
And Millwall probably would have completely changed the second half plan, how they would have gone about it. But it was John Swift. He set up our best chance of the game, I'd say, early on in the second half for Lucas Jowell there, Jacob. And it's a chance that maybe you score, but yeah, again, it's not an absolute sitter, is it?
No, and I don't know. Jowell, I'm not going to knock Jowell, because he's been brilliant ever since he's come back from injury. I think he's one of the very few players who've actually got signed on the dotted line for next season, isn't he? But then you don't know whether we're going to cash in and try and fill the FFP black hole. Were it not for Zhao, you know, missing, I would have thought, oh, okay, he's had an all right game again. But again, like, he's part of that unit up top that had been set up to counterattack, that didn't really play to his strength. So I don't know, just it's another chance missed. I know that, but you know, prior to this game, he was actually in quite deadly form. So, you know.
Yeah. Before that, he had 5-5. So I don't think anyone's gonna start criticizing. His record is nearly 1-2 since he signed for Reading. So that's pretty impressive. But I think we need to come on to the substitutes, because not really much happened after that for Reading at all. Okay, so now we have got Ovi Ejaria and Yaku Mate on the bench here, Matt. Now, we are 1-0 down. We are facing a huge relegation battle here. Do you, A, not bring on someone who scored 37 goals in the last 3 years in the Championship? Or do you, B... I just can't even deal with how this didn't happen. How did they not bring them on much earlier? I mean, these one of them. I understand maybe you don't go too kamikaze, but
do I get a prize if I get the right answer here? Because the anticipation's killing me. No, I mean it's you're watching it, and it's one thing, you know, castrated Paunovic for his substitutions at times were just abysmal, always waiting until the 75th, 76th or later minute to make a substitution. Paul Ince has come in and it's almost like it's Paunovic in just disguise with the substitutions. I mean, to be fair, people were lambasting Tom Ince, that it was, for not coming off, you know, but in fairness, in the second half, both Højlund and Ince were probably as bad as each other. They were both just nowhere in the game. They were so ineffective. But at that point, surely, you know, after 60, 65 minutes, like you say, you're 1-0 down, you're at home, you're playing against Millwall. Yes, they've won four on the bounce coming into this. But, like, you're only 1-0 down and you've got the players like we had on the bench and they're there to change a game. You know, does a Reading manager not realise you can use a bench to change a game? Maybe that's part of the reason why, you know, we never come back from losing position, seemingly, because whether it's tactical setup, you know, changes in games, like having a plan B and stuff, or substitutions, we just seem completely devoid of doing, you know. And it's a real problem, because like you say, you've got someone as good as Yaku Mate over Ejaria. You even had Baker was on the bench as well, so you know, you could have even potentially used him if you wanted to. I don't know, I've never seen him play, but like, you know, you had options there to change the game. Like I said, the wings were a real problem in that second half, because it just wasn't happening for either player. At that point, surely you've just got to make a double substitution. You know, you could have even made it 55 minutes, you know, because it was so evident from, again, there was a little spurt at the start of the game where it seemingly looked hopeful for about a minute, but then it just very quickly quietened down. The wingers were just nowhere to be seen, and it just stayed like that really until the end of the game, because Yaku comes on at 85 minutes. He's got no real chance then to change the game. Ovi's come on at 79 minutes, and like, come on, you know, you're waiting until nearly 80 minutes to make a sub. Like, it was one thing I said yesterday as well when I was watching the game. Why is it in every single game, no matter we're winning, losing, we could be 10-0 down, and we are still the second team to make a substitution? We are never making changes on the front foot. We're never trying to actively change things. And it's so infuriating to watch. It's like, it's genuinely getting just so frustrating watching it week on week on week unfurl in the exact same fashion.
What was more frustrating, Jacob, the lack of substitutions or Michael Jilks saying that if we had scored, no one would have mentioned it?
Yeah, but
I love you. You're an absolute legend, but that to me, it makes sense.
I don't know what it is about, you know, the management at the club just always have this real knack of coming out with a quote which just makes you want to like cringe yourself into some like origami like a shape. It's horrible. Like the, you know, saying, oh, well, if it had worked, you wouldn't be criticising me. Where it's like, well, it didn't. So we are going to criticise you. And you know, that was, you know, I know we're having a go at Jilks for coming out with the quote, but Ince was the one that, you know, made the decision, but then he didn't want to come out and front up, you know, to the press afterwards. So, which again adds to like this febrile political situation where, you know, we've said about his seeming reticence to substitute in his son in Tom until it's too late, and you know, to not do that and then to not front up to the questions after the game's already, you know, putting you on a bit of an uncertain footing with the fans at a time when you really need to, you know, be making an impression. But I think back to the substitution problem or lack of subs. The most frustrating thing for me is the fact that earlier in the season, we didn't have the tools on the bench to make a change. We were often fielding like 6 or 7 academy products on the bench, and, you know, maybe 1 or 2 seniors, one of whom would be Raphael or, you know, someone who wasn't, you can't really like lump Raphael up top, even though I'd love to see it. And he's not here anymore, so we definitely can't. But I think now we have the tools on the bench. You know, Mato should be starting for me, but if you're not going to start him, give him half an hour, you know, or put him on for the second half. Don't bring him on with 5 minutes to go and then to save face, like lob Scott Dan on with like 10 seconds on the clock.
That was just completely bizarre. Like, why?
That was one of the most baffling ones, because what, like at that point, you are just wasting time by bringing on Scott Dan.
You're losing. It's like time wasting when you're 1-0 down. Oh, totally weird. I mean, it's not a problem that's new to Ince, but it's a problem that we thought Ince would solve. And it's not. It's just
not be as bad at as bad as Pavlović. You know, as you say.
Yeah, but it adds to the, it just adds further fuel to the question of, like, if this is what it was going to be like, why make the, as someone that was calling for Pavlović to go, because it was clear that we needed a change, and the easiest thing to change, you know, barring sacking all the players, which is what's happening in the summer anyway, is bringing in, you know, a new manager just to get some new ideas across. But instead, we've made the change now, too late, and we haven't really given him the time to make a change. And in addition to that, he doesn't seem capable of making a change. So again, it's just a missed opportunity, because if we brought in, I know, you know, the likes of a Neil Warnock or someone with an actual reputation probably wouldn't have touched us with a barge pole, given how much of a basket case we are. Even then, you're not telling me, you know, Paul Ince was the best we could do, especially with all this weirdness with his son being here too. Somebody surely had to come in to organise us, and he doesn't really look like he's capable of doing it. I know it's early days, but, and I don't want him to fail. Lord knows I don't want him to fail. I want us to be in the Championship next season, but I'm just struggling to see what he's bringing to the table.
Yeah, I totally agree on all of that. It's hard to kind of... I mean, we're going to have to wait, aren't we? That's the thing. We're going to have another two or three games. Keep on seeing the other day, interim and all these things, but none of us really believe that, do they? I mean, the situation is Paul Ince is going to have the job until the end of the season, at least, unless we lose the next three or four games. And if that's the case, Matt, that would be catastrophic. And you'd feel we'd probably be back in the relegation zone.
Problem is, we probably are going to lose the next three or four games, because you look at the run of games we've got, you know, and we've got Forest away this weekend coming, you know, who are just a team rejuvenated under Steve Cooper this year.
The benefit of making an early change there, because they were Forest were rock bottom, they were doing really poorly, but they had the wherewithal to make a change early and to bring in the right man, which is two things we didn't do. So.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, and since then, like I say, because weren't they about 6-7 points adrift at one point? You know, and that was after about 10 games, you know, at the bottom. You know, and they've made that change, and now they're, you know, looking upwards, fighting for playoffs. But you know, you've got them away this coming weekend. Then you've got Bournemouth away in the week in midweek after, and then you've got Blackburn at home. You know, and it's like you look at those games and you think, you know, you're playing third, fourth and ninth as we stand, two of which are away from home. Mm. What points are we going to get from that realistically? You know, I know the Championship throws up weird and wonderful results, but sadly not for Reading, seemingly, actually, apart from Fulham away. Oh, a better time that was. but when you're saying about, you know, God help us if we don't get anything from the next three or four games, are we actually, like, you know, you're looking at it and you're thinking that's a bloody tough run of games. You know, Paul Ince, he's gonna have to show what he's about, or it's very much a sink or swim kind of moment for him, really.
The whole time you've got Derby and Barnsley breathing down your necks, and Derby, I know they were in a bit of a rough patch of form, but they, you know, won at the weekend. It just adds the pressure onto us, and you're just thinking a straight shootout, whether we're going to have enough. And I think, very briefly, going back to the whole making a change thing, the thing that confuses me is, because I know these owners are prone to doing weird things, they've not had a problem with binning off a manager early before. Mm. I mean, I understand. I know things were really dire and stuff, and we'd only like one of 17 at the point that he was giving his marching orders. But they still made it relatively early in the season, that change. We were talking like December, as opposed to, you know, 2 months into the new year. So why they decided to stick, you know, with things as they were for so long, I think is really going to cost us. And especially with what Matt says about the fixture list we've got, and the tough games coming up. You know, it's really all stacked against us now. And you just don't know where the next win's going to come from, really. You're just kind of praying for a fluke result.
Yeah, you are. I would normally at this point ask for a prediction for the game that's coming up, but I'm not going to do that because I think it's going to bring us all down. I'd be amazed if any of us predicted anything but a defeat. So thanks a lot for joining us. If you've been listening to this and if you've enjoyed it, subscribe on your platforms, whatever that may be. So cheers. Thanks for listening.